Good afternoon. I'd like to call the House Labor and Commerce Committee to order. Today is Monday, February 12, 2024. Let the record reflect the time is 3:19 p.m. Today we have President Representative Prox, Representative Wright, Representative Fields, Vice Chair Ruffridge, and myself, Chair Sumner. The staff will be assisting us today are Kevin Allen with House Records, Zachary Lawhorn with the LIO, and Clark Bickford, my staff and committee aide to House Labor and Commerce. Today we have three items on the agenda. We originally had four, but are moving House Bill 179 to a different day. We will start with public testimony from House Bill 273 and House Bill 289. Then we will have the first bill hearing on House Bill 200. Starting with House Bill 273, we set an amendment deadline on this bill and received one amendment. And I will move amendment number one at this time.
I'll object to hear about it.
Okay. Amendment number one is simple. It's just effective date language. You should have a copy.
Thank you. I remember my objection.
Okay. Without objection, amendment number one has passed. And we will open public testimony. Is there anybody in the room wishing to testify on House Bill 273? No? Okay. And I don't see anybody online. We will close public testimony. Do any committee members have questions for AHFC representatives? No? Well then, seeing no questions, Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you, Chair Sumner. I would move House Bill number 273, version alpha, also referred to as 33-GH2318/A, be advanced from committee as amended with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Okay, without objection, House Bill 273 is reported from committee. We will take a brief at ease to sign the committee report. We're now going to open public testimony on House Bill 289. Is there anybody in the room wishing to testify on House Bill 289? Please come forward, put your name on the record, and begin your testimony.
Mr. Chair, with your permission, I brought a few props at least to make the comments entertaining.
Could you put your name on the record, please?
Well, I should.
Thank you.
For the record, my name is Don Habiger, and I'm a founder of a small company here in Juneau, Alaska. And so, since you didn't say no, Mr. Chair, my daytime job is as the Juneau Reentry Coalition coordinator. However, my evening and weekend job is as founder of Appanage Fishing. I'm flying its colors today. As founder of Appanage Fishing, we have entered into the lure-making space. Our latest product is Vortax. Vortax came out 3 weeks ago, and it has a unique name, and I just want to make the committee a little bit aware of the name. The name is a combination of vortices, which is fluid dynamics, and we have a specially designed head that turns water into a vortices. Also, because we are so proud of being an Alaskan business, we threw Alaska in the name, hence the combination Vortax. Now, insofar as the bill is concerned, we heard from the department that business licensing is paying for itself. In fact, they realize a gain, and it goes back into the general fund. We also heard that if you do increase this fee, they're going to use it for marketing. I submit to you that general shotgun approach marketing doesn't help small businesses like myself, and I'd rather have that $50 in my pocket to market my own products. However, if you determine that it's better to tax me another $50, I submit that we ought to change the language in Section 1 to include after sole proprietorship, include or single member, a domestic limited liability company. Now, the benefit of that is that the federal government recognizes, and here's a blank copy of a W-9, recognizes that sole proprietors and individual membership LLCs are the same. We're taxed the same. And in fact, under this form, I'm required to sign my life away under penalty of perjury. With that, the department could easily count me as a sole proprietor. And when I get to that magic age of 65, I at least get that benefit and I get to keep my $50 in my pocket and spend it on marketing. So that concludes my testimony, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Is there anybody else in the room wishing to testify? Okay, go online. Doesn't look like we have anybody else. Going once, going twice. We will close public testimony. An amendment deadline on HB 289 is set for this Friday, February 16th at 11 a.m. We're going to set this bill aside for a future date. And moving on to House Bill 200, this is a first bill hearing on House Bill 200, a bill by request of the governor. There were changes made to House Bill 200, and today we'll be adopting a new version. Vice Chair Ruffridge, do you have a motion?
I do. Thank you, Chair Sumner. I move to adopt committee substitute for House Bill number 200, version S, also referred to as 33-GH1054/S.
Okay, without objection, the committee substitute has been adopted. I would now like to invite Adam Crum, Commissioner of the Department of Revenue, and Brandon Spanos, Acting Director of the Tax Division, to please approach the committee, put your names on the record, and begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Adam Crum, Commissioner for the Department of Revenue. I'd like to thank the committee members today for having us here to discuss House Bill 200. This is an act relating to poll tabs. Really what this is setting the parameters around and introducing a new type of poll tab into the state of electronic poll tabs. So there is a lot of data of other states that have been implementing items like this, and so the majority of the presentation I'll be handing off to Acting Tax Director Brandon Spanos to discuss some of the parameters around this, as well as updated fiscal notes that come with this. Thank you.
For the record, Acting Director of the Tax Division, Brandon Spanos, and I'm just going to jump right into the presentation. The presentation is based on the original bill, not the version S, so there are a few differences in what's in the presentation, and I'll try to point those out as we go. So the tax division is the gaming, I should say, charitable gaming within the tax division is fairly unique. The tax division's mission, as on the slide shown, slide two, is to collect taxes, inform stakeholders, and regulate charitable gaming. And we had to add that last section because of the small charitable gaming group within the division. Most of our administration in the tax division is the first part of that, of collecting taxes and informing stakeholders. However, this is a unique piece because we regulate the entire charitable gaming activities. That's not done by Department of Commerce or anyone else. That's done within our agency. And so we regulate the permittees, the licensees, and answer all the questions, as well as receive the tax returns and the tax payments like we normally would with any other tax program. Municipalities and qualified nonprofit organizations are eligible to conduct gaming activities as set out in the Alaska Gaming Reform Act. And the purpose of these activities is to derive public benefit in the form of monies for those organizations. There's a broad range of qualifying organizations that you can see listed out here in this slide. I won't read them all. And in addition to regulating poll tabs, the charitable gaming group within the tax division also regulates bingo and raffles. but we won't be speaking to those today since this bill is specific to pull tabs or expanding that definition of pull tabs. So the next slide, slide three, is an overview of the current structure of pull tabs. The charitable gaming program issues permits and licenses to conduct gaming activities. We collect the fees and the taxes. We conduct audits and investigate complaints. Permits are issued annually with a fee ranging from $20 to $100. The permittees are those charitable organizations that were on the previous slide, and a license fee, or rather, a license fee is annually assessed, and that ranges from $500 to $2,500, and that's for those operators of the games. A 3% tax on pull tabs sold by distributors is collected on a monthly basis, and a 1% fee of on net proceeds is collected on an annual basis from permittees in their if their gross receipts are over $20,000 or more. Monthly, quarterly, and annual returns are filed by permittees and licensees conducting gaming activities, depending on the amount of gross receipts and the type of permit or license. Manufacturers and distributors file monthly reports. Operators must file reports with permittees as well. Permit and license fees, pull tab taxes, and net proceed fees are deposited into the general fund, and those are listed here for the last 4 years, and that's out of our annual report. Or rather, we list the in our annual report all of the gaming. This is specific to pull tabs, but it's the same years in our annual report. And the historical revenue is specific, as I mentioned, to the to pull tabs, except for license fees. That was very difficult to break out, so that includes license fees for all licenses, but the majority of those are for pull tabs, and so it's not that distortive.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the chance to ask some questions in the year. Through the chair, Commissioner Crum, I'm just curious, where is the in the chart the total annual take for the annual permits, which range from $20 to $100? That's not reflected in the table. I'm just wondering why. Mr. Spanos, sorry.
Sure. I have the number on the next slide, but the I believe that is in with the license fees. I believe that's permits and licenses, but I'll have to double check that and get back to you.
Representative Crox.
Thank you, Chair Sumner. Through the chair, my understanding correctly that the first number, 3% gross tax, so the gross is considerably more. If I divide by 3%, I could figure out the gross. Is that correct?
So through the chair, Representative Prax, there was an earlier version of this that we've corrected. It's actually 3% pull tab tax, not gross tax. So that would be for the, I believe that was for the gross tax language came for the other, the raffle and the bingo. But this one is 3% pull tab tax. So we corrected that in this version.
Right. Thank you. Follow up. But same question then. This, if I divide this $2,268,040.79 by 3%, I would come up with the gross on pull tabs.
Through the chair, Representative Prax, that's correct.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
And that exact number should be in our annual report. I can't seem to find where I printed that out. But yes, that's if you go to our tax.alaska.gov, it'll have the gross number listed there, which, yes, you can back into. So continuing, if there are any other questions.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Real briefly, there's a big jump in the pull tab tax collection between 20 and 21. Any information as to why, what accounts for that jump?
Bars might have been closed, Representative Sadler. For COVID, probably.
So people stayed in and pulled tabs more. Okay.
So through the chair, Representative Sadler, that would have been my response. And that's been our response for most of the questions for decreases in taxes. Yeah, those years. And I got a nod, so I'm going to take it from our subject matter expert that's likely the case. So moving on to slide four, just another slide showing a bit more overview of the current structure. It shows the number of permittees, operators, and then what we call MVPs, or multiple beneficiary permittees. That's when several permittees can get together and do a game together, distributors, manufacturers, and then this is the number of reports that are filed each year with the tax division, and pretty self-explanatory there. The next slide, slide 5, goes over the history of the pull tab tax in Alaska, starting in 1960 when the Alaska legislature legalized gaming and gave oversight of these activities to the Department of Revenue. And then in 84, DOR authorized pull tab regulations. Then in 88, the legislature legalized operators, authorized pull tabs, which were previously in regulation, and increased the prize limits to the current 500,000. And then in 89, through administrative order, that was taken out of the Department of Revenue and put into Department of Commerce. They oversaw gaming and regulated gaming for a period of 4 years, which, you know, they do a lot of regulating. It made sense at the time. But then in 93, under a bill that had passed at the time, there was quite a bit of change that was done. That was House Bill 168, and it significantly changed various aspects of the statutes governing that charitable gaming in Alaska. Third-party vendors were brought under the statutory control, which allows permittees to contract with those vendors directly to sell pull tabs. And the department was authorized, or Department of Revenue was authorized to issue those multiple beneficiary permits that we saw on the last slide, those MBPs. And the MBPs enabled 2 to 6 permittees to conduct gaming activities jointly. Minimum payments increased from 15% to 30% of adjusted gross income for pull tabs, and require a minimum of 10% of adjusted gross income for all other activities.
Representative Fields.
Thank you. Through the chair, when the payments increased from 15 to 30%, was there any discernible effect on pull tab consumption or on volume? Thank you.
Through the chair, I'm afraid I have to get back to you on that. Yeah. So moving on to slide 6 for a basic bill overview. The commissioner has already kind of hit the main points on this. The bill would allow for an expansion of traditional pull tabs, which are basically cards that you pull the perforated piece off to reveal the what, you know, what you've won or not. And this would expand it to electronic pull tabs, or what is more commonly referred to as e-tabs. And so there's various devices of various sizes. There's larger machines, or there's some that are more like an iPad size or a tablet size screen that that could be deployed into to smaller locations. It increases the prize limits from that. Our current 500,000 that we saw was increased back in 93. And it is raising it from, and this is where it differs from version S, from the 500,000 to 2 million, which I believe is now 3 million, in prizes to each of the electronic pull tab activities, and a maximum of 1 million, which I think is now 2 million, in prizes for each of the year for gaming activities. And then it does provide for some unique limitations for electronic pull tab systems, such as a series may not exceed 15,000 tickets, vendors may not have more than 5 electronic pull tab devices on a premises, and operators may not have more than 10 electronic pull tab devices on a premises. And those don't same limits don't apply to a permittee. And then moving on to slide 7, this is the revenue impact, estimated revenue impact from our fiscal note. And this revenue impact was done by our economic research group. The data was basically taken from 5 states that had have already implemented e-tabs in their state, and that where their data was readily available. The average of those states is the number that we put into our fiscal note. That's that middle number there. But we also provide here a low case and a high case, since that is just a point in a wide span of possible outcomes. And so you can see that there's a range of uncertainty there. And then to note, FY25 impact is expected to be zero, as we would anticipate a year of standing up the program and doing the regulations and having those the actual machines shipped to the locations to have them available for use. And slide 8 is the implementation costs for the Department of Revenue. The charitable gaming group has been reduced over the years through budget cuts, and we are down to just a skeleton crew. So these changes are kind of the straw that would break the camel's back. They do require an added burden on the division, and we foresee a need of two additional positions in order to administer the new system and be able to provide enough customer service and oversight and regulatory oversight. And so that cost of the two position comes at a $225,300 per year, and that's reflected in our fiscal note. And other costs are software changes and added lines on our returns, but those would be absorbed by the division.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Spanos. On slide 7, the total additional revenue, is that inclusive of all the different four revenue sources, license fees, permitting, net proceeds, and tax? Is that a fair assumption?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I'm trying to remember on our analysis. I believe it does, but I will have to double-check that and get back to you.
Yeah, tell the chair and he'll get it to us.
Actually, I might have to reverse that. I think... Well, I'll double check, but I believe that we didn't know if there would be more licensees and operators. There may be the same number of licensees and operators because the permittees. Permittees are the charities receiving the funds. We aren't sure if ETABS would create more charities applying to be permittees, nor do we know if it will create a larger increase in operators. But what we are showing is an increase in revenue because those five states. What I should have noted when I was on this slide, what those states saw wasn't what was anticipated. What was anticipated was that gaming would shift from pull tab, like a traditional pull tab, to e-tab. What they saw was it was an increase. There was new gaming, so it brought in maybe some younger gamers or some people that didn't know or weren't interested in using the cards. So it's new revenue, but not necessarily new operators.
Thank you. If you could, sir, through the chair, to get the details on where those numbers came from. When you say revenue, I'm not sure if you mean just the tax or what you mean when you say revenue. So if you get the breakout, I should appreciate it.
Sure. Through the chair, Representative Sadler, yes, we'll get back to you on that.
Representative Fields.
Thank you. I just want to flag that Section 5 actually gives the department authority to approve by regulation a wide range of other gaming. And I was curious, through the chair, why that language is in there, because it seems to potentially go way beyond electronic pull tabs. Thank you. Through the chair, to clarify, the bill would add the language unless expressly authorized by the department, which I think would give the ability of the department to authorize by regulation essentially a full-on casino, if I'm reading that correctly.
So through the chair, Representative Fields, so Section 5 is amending a current statute that's already there and adds those words unless expressly authorized by the department. And I'll have to get back to you on whether, so, and I'd have to even double check, is this the version S or was that in the original governor version? I'll have to get back to you. So, slide 8, we've gone over, so I'm going to move on to slide 9, which is the sectional analysis. And with the chair's permission, I'll go ahead and read through the sectional analysis. The Section 1 amends the examination of books and records of AS05-15070 to include electronic pull tab systems. Section 2 amends AS05-15180A to clarify the authority of the Department of Revenue to authorize and regulate the use of electronic pull tabs in the state. Section 3 amends AS05-15180B to include electronic pull tab systems as an allowable activity under this chapter. Section 4 amends AS05-15180G for the prize limits for permittees that contract with an operator to a maximum of $2 million. Again, that's now $3 million in prizes each year for electronic pull tab activities and a maximum of $1 million, which I believe is now $2 million. In prizes each year for other gaming activities. Section 5 amends AS05-15181A to include electronic pull tab systems to pull tab manufacturers license as required by the department. Section 6 amends AS05-15181C to include an encryption requirement for poll tabs and to remove the requirement for a serial number issued by the National Association of Fundraising Ticket Manufacturers or other serial number label. Section 7 amends 0515-181D to allow poll tab manufacturers the ability to distribute electronic poll tab systems to licensed distributors. Section 8 adds 0515-181F through J to require a specific electronic poll tab endorsement for manufacturers and distributors, provisions for the security of encryption of electronic poll tabs, and requiring the submission of electronic poll tabs and poll tab systems for independent testing and certification. Section 9 amends 0515-183A to require a poll tab distributor license to distribute electronic poll tab systems. Section 10 amends AS 0515-183C to require electronic poll tab systems to be distributed from a location in the state. Section 11 amends 0515-183E to allow poll tab distributors to deliver electronic poll tab series information to a vendor's location. And Section 12 adds 0515-183F through G to require an electronic poll tab endorsement from a licensed distributor. Section 13 amends 0515-185 to conform with language from Section 6. And Section 14 adds 0515-185B through C to include the following specific requirements for electronic poll tab series, and that is to have a permitted and finite number of winning and non-winning tickets, have a permitted prize amount and structure, have a unique serial number that is not regenerated, and a series may not exceed the 15,000 ticket limit. Section 15 amends 0515-187E to include language preventing a person under the age of 21 from accessing or redeeming a poll tab. Section 16 adds 0515-187J through M to include the following restrictions on poll tab devices. Vendor may not have more than 5 electronic poll tab devices on the premises. An operator may not have more than 10 electronic poll tab devices on premises. They may not accept U.S. currency in paper form, purchased credits, or a credit voucher. Commissioner, may only accept U.S. currency in the paper form, purchased credit, or credit voucher. You were wondering what form of payment were they going to receive. They may not mimic a slot machine. They may not dispense anything of value other than a credit voucher. Section 17 amends 0515-188I to include electronic fund transfers as an option for vendors to pay the member in charge permittee, the ideal net, less compensation owed to the vendor. Section 18 adds 0515-188L to prohibit the department from registering a vendor who is otherwise barred under 0515-105. Section 19 amends 0515-690-38 to expand the definition of poll tab or poll tab game to include an electronic representation of a card. Section 20 amends 0515-690-45 to expand the definition of a series to include electronic poll tabs and have a unique serial number. And I believe finally Section 21 adds 0515-690-50 to define electronic poll tab system.
Thank you. I represent Sadler.
Thank you to the chair, Mr. Spanos. On Section 17, there's reference to the ideal net. That's not a term I'm familiar with. Can you define what the ideal net is? Sounds aspirational, not factual.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, for that, I will have to call on my lifeline at the if that's all right with the chair.
Marty?
John? Why don't we hold off on that?
Okay. Because we can get back to you on that. Yeah. That's an answer the division does know, but I personally do not.
Right.
Yeah.
Representative Fields?
Thank you, through the chair. I was hoping that the department could speak a little more to the charitable gaming beneficiaries and impact under the bill. I was reviewing a Matsu Amateur Hockey Association letter that expressed concern. I just want to make sure that you all understand the concern, because I want to understand the impact on these charities. So the Hockey Association expresses a concern that the e-tab manufacturers, I'm reading from their letter, could take 35 to 50% of revenues out of the Alaska economy, and that basically a shift to electronic poll tabs could diminish traditional poll tab consumption with negative impact. How many charitable gaming beneficiaries are there? How have you modeled revenue impacts to these charitable gaming beneficiaries? Thank you.
Through the chair, Representative Fields, if we go back to slide 4. That shows the total number of permittees. So those are the charitable organizations. That's how many would be affected by a potential change. And again, we would anticipate an increase in revenue from the change to ETAB. So basically, there would be more gaming happening in the state based on those other 5 states that our economic research group looked at. As far as additional revenue going outside of the state, nothing changes in the statute. So what's the operators that are doing business in the state, some of those do print, some of those operators are outside the state today, and they manufacture the pull tabs and they ship them into the state, and they do receive a portion of that revenue today. We don't anticipate that changing with ETABs. The manufacturers could be in-state, they could be out-of-state. That's currently allowed under current statute. We don't anticipate there being a change in that. But with more revenue, yes, there is a potential that the percentage that is going out-of-state today will be the same, and that would continue.
Okay. Do you have a question, Representative Prox?
No?
Okay. Proceed.
So that did conclude our presentation.
Mr. Crum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, this is Commissioner Crum. I just want to reiterate to the committee that in the analysis, when we look at other states that have recently implemented the electronic gaming aspect to it, really the paper pull tab section, that dollar amount that came in, the beneficiaries, the charitable amounts did not change, meaning the paper tabs still exist as it is. And the east side brought in a different crowd and expanded the overall gaming. So both the revenue to the state and the total amount of dollars available to go towards charities actually increases as a whole.
All right. Well, thank you. I guess we also have invited testimony from Mary Magnuson. Is that right?
Magnuson.
Sorry. Handwriting is not great. From Arrow Gaming, and I believe she has a presentation, so we will take a brief at ease while we get ready for that. And I do apologize. I have to step out for a call, so I will be turning this over to Vice Chair Ruffridge. So we are taking a brief at ease.
Record, and like to welcome Mary Magnuson to the committee, and looks like you have your presentation all ready to go. So whenever you're ready, introduce yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for inviting me here today. As you have indicated, my name is Mary Magnuson. I am currently the Vice President of Government Affairs for a company called Arrow International, which is a manufacturer of charity gaming equipment, including paper pull tabs, as well as the electronic devices. Prior to working with Arrow, I was also the executive director and legal counsel for something called the National Association of Fundraising Ticket Manufacturers, and that's in the bill. I suggested a slight correction because there are no longer any stickers issued by the National Association of Fundraising Ticket Manufacturers for serial numbers, so that was just a correction. And then prior to that, I was with the Minnesota Attorney General's office and was the manager of the gaming division. So the long and the short of it is I've been working on gaming, and particularly charity gaming, for many, many years. And if I told you how many, then I'd have to disclose my age, so I'm not going to do that. I also want to apologize for my appearance today. Normally I would be much more dressed up for this. But I had a little mishap this morning, and after the hearing, I'm going to go visit your fine establishment, Representative Ruffridge, and broke my wrist. So this turns out to be the only thing I can get on. So we had to make do.
Well, for the record, we're happy that you're here with us and that you seem to be weathering that storm okay.
But so far, apologize so, for so far, so good.
Yes.
So let me just talk a little bit about the commissioner and Mr. Spano talked a little bit about and showed you a chart about the licensees and listed some of them. This chart simply shows a breakdown of what those permittees actually look like in terms of how they fall into certain categories. So you can see like the largest category is is charitable. There's civic service, educational, fraternal, veteran. So this is just how they break down within your permittee scheme. So what we really want to talk about today is electronic poll tabs. And I'm here to sort of just give you the background on what they are, give you a little bit of education on what electronic poll tabs are really all about, and why this could be extraordinarily beneficial to the permittees and beneficiaries in the state of Alaska. There are two types of electronic poll tab devices. One device is a cabinet, which, you know, is a standalone type cabinet. And the second device is a tablet. And I brought an example of one of the tablets here. So you can see they're relatively small. It's just a Microsoft Surface tablet. And the same games are on both. The difference being that the cabinets have a bill acceptor into which money can be inserted. These require someone to go visit the POS system, turn some money over to a seller, and then the credits are loaded on the device for play, and then the device gets turned back in after play, whereas on the cabinet, there's a little voucher slip that comes out that the player can return to collect any winnings that they might have come by. There's pictures of both on here. The stuff on the left is, or on my right, I should say, your left probably, are the tablets. And the stand-up thing is just a charging stand where the devices go in for charging. It's not an actual device itself. The electronic pull tabs are really designed to be a digital version of a paper pull tab game. And so without getting too far into the weeds on that, paper pull tab games come in a box. And within that box, there's a certain number of tickets. And the manufacturer determines what the winners and the losers are. They don't know where they are, but they're predetermined winning and losing tickets. So there's, and then they are shuffled and put into the box in such a way that there's no way to pick out winning tickets from losing tickets. Same thing is true with the electronic device, in that there is essentially an electronic box of tickets. There's a set number, a maximum here of 15,000 in the bill we're talking about. And each of those tickets is simply, as a player hits the button to play, the tickets are just issued serially, just like they would be from a box. And there's a certain number of tickets in the deal. There are predetermined winners and losers. The devices themselves do not contain any kind of a random number generator, which is what you'd have in a slot machine, which, you know, randomly picks out it whether you win or lose. Everything is predetermined exactly like the paper version of the game. So you and many of the same games that are in the paper side that are very popular already in Alaska can simply be put onto the electric device, so the players will know and be familiar with the games, and they'll play roughly the same way. They're very, very compatible. One of the differences is you can have multiple games on the devices, so there might be 6, 12, 15 games, which is comparable to if you go into a pull tab store, you'll see a number of different containers on the bar, and there might be 6, 12, 15, depending on the size of the store. So same concept. Players can then choose which games they want to play, just like they can pick out which tickets they want from the various boxes. And either the charity or, in the case of an operator, they decide what games they want on the device. They decide what they want the price to be it 50 cents, $1, $2. And they can also choose what they call the payout, or how much money, what percentage of the money goes back in the form of prizes. So all those are you know, actually selectable by the charities or the operators. So they can really try to closely approximate the paper games as much as possible. The electronic devices do require internet. but they don't require any kind of special internet. They don't require VPN or anything like that. Standard internet works. And so that's perfectly acceptable to simply have standard internet. Some systems will have a server in the state that will then talk to servers at each location. And the games will be located in, will be actually downloaded into the servers at the location. And then they'll be played really via Wi-Fi within the site from the server. And the benefit of that, without getting too technical, is that if there are interruptions in the internet, it doesn't affect the play. So in some of those locations where that are perhaps more rural in nature, where there may be some instability in the internet, it doesn't have any effect on the play. The play doesn't go down as a result. Now, if it's down for many days, it could be an issue. But generally speaking, small interruptions do not affect the play.
And if you're okay, Representative Fields has
yes,
a question.
Thank you, through the chair. I'm curious about the rate of play. Like in the industry, do you track the number of pull tabs that you tear electronically versus the average person tears in paper? How do you track the rate of play?
Through the chair, Representative Fields, the only way to really track that is to look at a like a paper pull tab game. When the game is sold through, you'll know how many tickets were sold, what the prizes were, and what the profit is to the charity. In the case of an electronic game, the devices will record every single play. And every single prize. So you'll have a very accurate representation of what the rate of play and the volume of play is on the devices. With the paper, you can kind of gauge that, but you have to really kind of wait till the game is closed, and then you can audit the game and kind of figure it out.
Okay, great. If I could ask a follow-up, in these other, I guess, five states where there are electronic pull tabs, what is the average duration that a person plays, and how much money does the average person spend? Or maybe if you have like a, I'd like to see a distribution of, you know, what's the median and kind of what are the extremes in terms of how people play.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Fields. I don't know that data is available. I'd be happy to try to look at that. I think what we could do is we might select a few representative locations and see if we can't pull that information for you. It wouldn't necessarily be the average overall, but I
sure.
think we could identify maybe 5 or 10 different locations and try to come up with a number.
Great. Thank
for
you.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had occasion once to be in Las Vegas and walking through the casinos to the conference, to the information. I was fascinated and a little awed by the what I saw. So I did a bit of research into how the industry does measure the how long it takes to place a bet in the slot machines. And I was impressed to find out that some of the software behind the slot machines would figure out if someone wanted to get to the betting real quick. So the machines had a built-in incentive or built-in measurement and feedback loop to hurry up to the next bet quickly. So I'd like to know also what data you have on the comparative usage between the physically tearing a rippy or physically scratching a scratch off versus the rate of play, as it were, in electronic pull tabs. I, given the amount of money available, I would be very surprised if somebody in the industry did not know that information. But I'd love to see whatever I could from you.
Okay.
As universal data as we could.
Yeah. Okay.
Please.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I do not have that information readily available, but I can tell you this, that because in the electronic pull tabs, everything is predetermined. So it's the tickets, the electronic tickets are coming down directly as they are placed in that electronic box. So there is no algorithm within the device to alter the way the games play out like they do on slot machines. So with the electronic pull tabs, you get what has already been predetermined. So you will not have that same type of situation where there's an alteration where, hey, this person looks like they like to play this way, so the machine alters. Can't happen. It just plays. Each time you hit the button, you get a ticket. And the next time you hit the button, you get a ticket. And you can hit it as fast as you want, and there's nothing going to change. on that device to try to determine how you play or what your preferences are in play. Again, one of the big distinctions between slot machines and the electronic pull tabs. But what, you know, but they do play, I will say, they do play a little faster in that everything comes up. Now, I've seen people open rippies, you know, one-handed and quite quickly.
Like you're going to be.
Yeah, and I would be one-handed doing it, yeah. They're very fast. Some people just, you know, take their time and they open each individual tab. On these devices, you can have two different features. You can have an open all feature where you just hit a button and all the windows open at one time. Or you can have a feature where they open one by one. So you have to maybe hit three times in order to open. And some people like that, and they can be configured to do that at the player option. Or they can be configured to go a little bit faster if they prefer to just hit one button and see them all open serially. So a lot of it depends. The other thing that the electronic pull tabs have is with paper pull tabs, there's something called a seal card, which is just that there are certain tickets that when opened can cause a person to go to another, like another board, and there might be some seals on there that they can open. So it's just a way to extend sort of the play. With the electronics, what happens is there are certain games that have what's called an extended play on them. So let's say I'm going to win $50, and my first window opens up, and it doesn't show $50, but it says maybe something like, oh, bonus round. So then I'll go to a different screen, and after about a minute or longer, there'll be some entertaining graphics. In the bananas game, there'll be some monkey swinging from the trees or whatever. And at the end of that extended play, I'll get my $50. There's no increase in prize. There's no additional money that goes in. You just have a little bit of an entertaining feature that kind of drags out the play. So you don't get that really on the paper. So while people can play these electronics faster, they can also play them considerably slower if they take advantage of the extended play features, and they're built into every single game. So sometimes it drags out.
Representative Wright.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Can you explain how to play the game? I've never played before, and I'm just taking a look at it. Is it just like you have to line up the three emojis and then you get a certain amount of money, or is there always an opportunity for you to win in these games?
Through the chair, Representative Wright, there's an opportunity to win, but you don't always win, just like the paper game. So in the paper game, you would open the windows on the paper ticket. Some will be winners, some will be losers. On a paper game in Alaska, generally about 80% of the money wagered goes back to the players in the form of prizes. So it's a pretty good deal for the players, but you can lose, and people do. The limit here is $500, so nobody can win more than $500. That's not being changed. And the maximum bet's $2. So then that's not being changed. On the electronics, what you do is you simply push a button. And when you push the button, the window on the screen opens up, just like on a paper ticket. Like I said, it may open up kind of all at once, or it may open up serially. So maybe three or five windows will open up, but they will simply open up, and then you will see if you win or if you lose. If you lose, you maybe hit again or you quit. If you win, instead of getting a voucher at that time, you'll just have credits go on to the device, which you can then replay if you want, or you can cash out and get your voucher and go redeem your winners. So it's roughly the same way. And if you want to, I have this that we should be able to set it up. I can show you after the hearing if you'd like to see how it really works.
Thank you.
The last thing I want to say about the electronics that is important is that there is a very robust record keeping and reporting system associated with it. So each system comes with a point of sale system, and that point of sale system, as I said, records every single play on the device. And so all the records become electronic and easily accessible. So rather than having to fill out forms and wait till the games, close and audit them out, on the electronics, you're simply allowed to go in and push some buttons, and you'll get reports for both the permittee, the operator, and then reports can also be configured for the Department of Revenue, so they get the information that they want. And they can also remotely then go into the system and pull those reports on their own. They don't have to wait for them to be submitted to them. So rather than waiting for the reports to get filed with the department can simply go in and get the data anytime they want to and have that data at their disposal.
Representative Sapp.
Thank you, through the chair. Ma'am, I saw briefly the tablet there. Is that an iPad or a Samsung or some standard manufacturer tablet that the software is the only thing different, or is that especially manufactured by your company or other company you work with? Who makes the tablets, and what are they?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, it's a this one is a Microsoft Surface tablet.
Okay.
That is loaded specifically for playing these games. If it walks out the door from a particular location, it's useless. There's nothing else on it that there's no communication capabilities on it other than for the purposes of playing the game. And they're geofenced so that they're not operable. If we don't really see theft, but if for some reason someone thought, hey, this is cool, I want one of these, it's useless to them once they walk out the door.
I couldn't talk about it, but that fellow, understanding that there are very smart people that can hack things, I just would be curious to make sure that, I don't know what kind of capabilities there might be inside the machine, the tablet, that might not be utilized by the software for the electronic e-tabs that might still be available. So I would like to hear any more reassurance you could give me that some smart person couldn't hack it and somehow avail themselves of all the prize money somehow, or to change the odds or somehow mess with the integrity of the system.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, everything in it is encrypted, so they'd have to get through the encryptions in order to do anything. We have in most of the manufacturers now have installed various types of software for security purposes. And Minnesota came up with a new idea last year where they require all manufacturers to have what's called a SOC 2 Type 2 audit, which is a, and don't ask me to give you the details on it, but it's a type of audit that's done by IT professionals to look at the security of the system, and you have to meet certain metrics in order to pass that type of an audit. So not only are the device is designed to be, not easily affected, but now audits in place where if there are any shortcomings within anybody's system, they will be identified and they'll have to be rectified.
Well, to share a follow-up, a more prosaic question perhaps is, what happens if one of these run a front restaurant drinking establishment and someone breaks it? Who's liable for the cost of the tablet? Is it the person who owning the bar, the permittees? Where does that damage or where does that loss accrue to?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, the distributor would simply replace the device.
At their cost?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. So I should point out that these devices go to the charities with no upfront cost. So they will get the devices, they'll get the software, they'll get game updates. They'll get 24/7 service, both via the phone and or internet, as well as on-site service when and if that's necessary. So they're not going to, they don't buy these devices. They simply buy the games that are then provided to them, and they only pay for the games after the tickets are actually played. So unlike a paper game where you spend, you know, X dollars on a game, you may or may not sell all the tickets. If people don't like the game, you might not sell them and they're sitting there or you have to take them out of play. You've already paid for those tickets and you're not getting any revenue on them. That doesn't happen with the electronics. If on the electronics, you get a 15,000 ticket deal, you sell five tickets, you pay for five tickets. And that's it. You're not looking at any kind of unplayed tickets. All right, we better move on or we'll be here all day. This is just a chart that shows you the similarities between the paper and the electronics, and I won't go through it all because it's pretty exhaustive. But in short, you can see that the winners are all predetermined in both cases. The charity has a guaranteed profit. Oh, and I might answer the question about ideal net. The ideal net is when all the tickets are sold. If all the tickets are sold in the game and all the prizes are redeemed, that would be your ideal net. So it is aspirational, but assuming you sell all the tickets and assuming you redeem all the prizes, that's what the charity has left. Benefits, I think we've already touched on those, and I think the commissioner touched on those. Increased revenues, we'll get to that. To attract some more diverse players. When we say a bit younger player, we're not talking about, you know, 21-year-olds. We're talking about people who maybe are in their 50s or something like that. So what we've noticed a lot in veteran and fraternal clubs, for example, is when they've introduced electronic pull tabs, they've seen an increase in membership as a result, because people who maybe weren't interested went to the club. They maybe accompanied a member. They got there. They realized that this isn't what we anticipated. This isn't what we thought the VFW was like, or the American Legion. This is much more interesting. And they join. Same thing happens to the Moose, the Elks. We did a survey in Ohio after 1 year of electronic pull tabs. And we simply surveyed veteran and fraternal groups. And 97% of the respondees said they saw an increase in membership as a result of having the electronic pull tabs. And for veteran and fraternal clubs, veteran clubs in particular, that's pretty important because they are losing members right and left, and they need something to help spur their membership. So for those groups, it's been a real game changer for them. These also complement paper games. You don't see much of a reduction in the paper games, if any. Sometimes it's an increase. Simplified monitoring, reporting, and enhances regulatory oversight. And again, that's basically that the Department of Revenue can log into the system at their discretion. I think we'll just move on for here. Basically, there will be no change in the regulatory structure specifically. We're not talking about increasing prizes or increasing wager amounts or anything like that. So here's just some charts that you can look at to show you what the revenues look like in the states that the commissioner was talking about and how the revenue went. So in Ohio, as you can see, they had paper pull tabs this shows you from 2019. 2020 is a dip. That's COVID year. And then we had a rebound. And then as you can see, from 2022 to 2023, a pretty significant increase in revenues and a pretty flat paper pull tab, but no discernible reduction in paper pull tab sales. And these are numbers directly from the Ohio Attorney General's office, which is the regulatory agency. Minnesota had a similar sort of deal, huge increase in electronics, a little bit of a drop in paper over the last year, but that might be temporary, but it was marginal because the numbers there are extraordinarily high. And so that's a pretty small dip on the paper side. North Dakota, same thing, pretty flat on the paper, massive increase in electronic revenue over the course of their few years. And they have gotten to the point where they have, you know, vastly more revenue on the electronics than on the paper anymore. But their paper was never very high, but it just stayed flat. Kentucky, same thing. A smaller increase in the electronics because the type of devices they had were very outdated until 2023. They don't have their 2023 numbers available yet for us, but you'll see a spike in the electronic revenue from 2023 because they have gone to a more modern type of device. Virginia, I don't have paper data because it was not collected by the state, but you can see the increase in revenues as a result of electronics from 2013 to 2022. And then here's a net profit comparison. The average over the course of those states is about a 74% increase in net receipts. And by net receipts, I'm talking about the ideal net, basically, the gross less the prizes paid. You can see on the blue column is last year of paper pull tabs only. The orange column is electronics, a recent year of paper, and then the gray is electronics in the first year of electronics. So you can sort of see that the paper doesn't really decline too much, and the electronics by far make up for any decline in the paper in the form of revenues. And then how that comes down to charity. Right now in Alaska, the charities in 2022, I believe, made about $45 million in profit. And if you look at what's happened over the course of those last 5 years, the average would be about a 40% increase, which would be an additional $20 million for charity. So not massive, but for a lot of charitable organizations, that's pretty meaningful amount of money. And I thank you very much. And if you have more questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Representative Fields.
Thank you. Through the chair, what have you found in terms of customer demographics in some of the states that have recently expanded pull tabs? Is that something that your company is tracking?
We can track it. Through the chair, Representative Fields. We can track it anecdotally. What we found in Ohio, for example, is younger people, but you know, 50s plus. Minnesota, again, it's a younger demographic, but it's not a youthful demographic. It's like, well, for me, it's youthful, but I mean, they're in their 40s and 50s. You don't see kids going in and playing. You don't see 20-year-olds playing. You see people who are middle age or more that play these things. The same. It's really kind of the same demographic as the paper tickets, with a little bit of a skew to a little bit younger, because the younger people, you know, they're used to using their phones. I mean, we have our boarding passes on our phones. We have games on our phones. We have different things on our phones. And they like the ability to use the electronic version rather than the paper version. But we're not seeing very young people joining this type of gaming.
Other questions?
Any?
So I had just one, and I'm not certain if it's directed for you or for Mr. Spanos or Commissioner Crum, but it seems like the majority of the presentations were all directed around a very specific either estimated revenue impact or then the charitable gaming impact. But it'd be really great to see, or maybe you have or could speak to, the breakdown sort of the cost, like where the dollar goes, because there's a significant amount of dollars being spent in the pull tab industry in Alaska. And if there's a way to break down sort of, and I think all the information is here, it's just not sort of condensed in the way that be really helpful for somebody to understand. So 1% goes here, 3% of tax, 10% to charity, and I'm making up numbers. Is that something you feel comfortable speaking to, or is that an answer for somebody else?
Mr. Chair, I can speak to it a little bit. We actually are working on putting together some data for you on that. We just have to make sure that we can verify the data sources and make sure it's accurate. But we can get that to you, and maybe by Friday we might be able to have that put together for you. The long and the short of it is there is a slight increase in cost of the electronic games, in part because there's no upfront cost, and it includes all the servicing, and it includes the POS system, the equipment, software upgrades, and all that stuff. It is not 50%. It's going to be closer to probably 30%. And that's actually a little bit lower, but the average across the country is somewhere between 30 and 35%. Now, that's not set in stone, so it's negotiable. And so, you know, it's entirely possible that charities may say, hey, we don't want to pay that much. We want to pay more. And there's competition between the manufacturers. There'll probably be four different manufacturers who will be interested in doing business in Alaska. All of them will compete to get as much business as they can, which is going to have a competitive effect on pricing. And if one goes low, everybody else pretty much follows. So that's the way it goes. But in terms of the dollars, I think we can kind of break down like a dollar and show you where some of that money goes. It's a little hard to do on expenses because everybody has a little different expenses. You know, how much is your rent? That's going to vary. We can tell you kind of what the games cost, both paper and electronic. There's maybe some people have more employees than others. Maybe some people have no employees because the bartender at the American Legion is handling the pull tabs. And so that's already maybe absorbed. So it's a little bit hard to do that on a kind of an apples to apples comparison, but we can try to put some numbers together for you.
Thank you. Yeah, I think I like what you said about comparing it to the dollar. So if I spend a dollar on a pull tab, whether electronic or in paper form, how much goes to the charity that I hope to support? How much goes to run the operation? How much goes to the cost? So on and so forth. And maybe I will give Commissioner Crum or Mr. Spanos an opportunity to answer that as well before we end committee time today. But if you have that information as well, that would be helpful. I wanted to follow up on what you had said on 30% or 35%. So that would be sort of a lease agreement done with a manufacturer, if I understand that correctly, where if I'm operating a game, I would want to have electronic games, for example, you would offer that to me, and then there would be a contract that would say of all sales, 30% of sales goes towards the lease arrangement, or could you
In short,
clarify?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, the Alaska operates in a way that the sales have to go through a distributor, and so the manufacturer would have an agreement with the distributor, and then the distributor, who must be located in Alaska, and then, you know, we'll then have the arrangements with the various permittees or operators or whatever. And the manufacturer can determine, basically, you know, what they will sell the product for to the distributor, but then the distributor can determine independently what price they might charge as well.
Okay. Representative Fields.
Did Mr. Spanos come back through the chair?
Yes, I had some intentions for that.
Thank you.
But I want to be cognizant of whenever we're done with questions for Ms. Magnus. Other questions? All right.
Thank you very much.
Seeing none, thank you for your presentation. We will invite Commissioner Crum, Acting Director Spanos, back to the podium. Reintroduce yourselves for the record, please. And Representative Fields, I'll let you go first.
Thank you. Through the chair, I feel like I relearn this charitable gaming stuff for every couple of years when it comes up. So thanks for helping with that process. I think, through the chair, a concern I've heard is that if we're increasing the prize money, then we could be reducing either the number of charitable organizations that get the benefits or the benefit per charitable organization, unless there's increased revenue beyond that. Is that kind of an accurate way of looking at it. So if we're increasing prize number, less money is going to charities, and then we would need to increase total take by more than that for the charities to come out ahead.
So again, for the record, Brandon Spanos, Acting Director for the Tax Division, Department of Revenue, through the chair, Representative Fields. If I understood the question correctly, you're saying if there's, since there is an estimated additional revenue, you're asking where that delta goes?
I guess I was asking if the prize money is higher, then wouldn't that be less money going to charities, and then we would have to make that up in more revenue? Is that an accurate understanding of how the system works?
through the chair, Representative.
You are welcome to. Yeah,
it feels maybe, like you maybe have we could bring up my.
This is our lifeline.
Yeah, please, lifeline approach and put yourself on the record, and we can get no on the record.
My name is Martha Abel. I'm the gaming manager for Charitable Gaming. I don't believe prizes have increased. Mary was speaking to expenses have increased, but not prize amounts. The prize limits are still in place. Like in Alaska, it can't be higher than $500. That's the maximum you can win. So what's that? Oh, the prize limit increase.
Yeah, thank you. Through the chair, maybe.
Hey, I thought you meant.
Maybe Ms. Abel.
Yes.
Could if I've misunderstood, maybe she could explain how I misunderstood. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I misunderstood you.
So through the chair, Representative Fields, again, Brandon Spanos, acting director. So the estimated revenue is increasing, but the percentage that goes to the charities would remain the same. Other than there is an increase in costs. Am I right there? Sorry. I'm going to let Martha.
Now that I understand the prize.
Put your name on the record one more time.
Oh, sorry.
Our folks recording.
Martha Abel.
Thank you.
With prize limits being higher, allowing more to your prize limit for an operator or permittee, you can increase how much gaming that you do. So what Brandon's saying, that revenue can increase. You're allowed to do more gaming with prize, because if prize limits are limited annually, then how much you can gain. Once you do gaming activity for pull tabs and you've reached that prize limit, you have to stop so they can do more gaming.
Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, for the record, Commissioner Crum. So through the chair, Representative Fields, I think that the volume of the gaming increases, and each of the operators or permittees, the vendors or operators get to actually do more. And to your question, Mr. Chair, earlier, we're going to put together a visual of the cost stack of what it looks like for the current structure as well as the new structure with the e-pull tabs of what that breakdown is of where that dollar does go, so you can see what that looks like. And so we'll provide that in our committee response.
Excellent. Thank you. Any other Representative Souther?
Thank you. Just for terminology's sake, not quite sure who can easily answer this. Just the terminology of who are the permittees, vendors, manufacturers, just put in colloquial terms so those of us not in the know about the business kind of go through the chain, who manufactures down to the guy at the bar.
Martha Abel, again. Manufacturers make the pull tabs. They sell them to distributors that distribute the pull tabs to permittees, multi-beneficiary permittees, which is a group of permittees together under one umbrella. There can only be up to six under that umbrella. So it's like a type of permittee, but it's a group of permittees together. Does that not make sense?
It does, but sorry. For example, can you illustrate?
What's that? Start with defining permittee. Sorry, yeah, I should have started that. A permittee is a nonprofit or municipality that has a permit. Then they're called a permittee. And if you have a permit, you can say up to six people that have a gaming permit, so those would be nonprofits and charities that have a gaming permit, can form a joint agreement and conduct gaming together, and that's called a multi-beneficiary permit. They have to get an additional permit that's called an MBP, we call it for short, but multi-beneficiary permit. They have to get that separate permit, and they have to disclose to us what the joint agreement is and who the permittees are under it. And what that does is increases the play, again, how much gaming they can do, because they can do the prize limit, which is currently $2 million annually for a permittee. They can do $2 million times how many permittees that they have under the MVP, which is only up to 6, but it still increases.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Follow up. If you could put names, or these are theoretical terms, and I have no doubt they're accurate, but just to give me some sense, who's a manufacturer? Is it Arrow? Who's a distributor? Is it Bob's Distributing Company? And you know, pull that, whatever. And who's a multi-beneficiary? Who's a permittee? Who's a vendor? Just hang some names on it so I know who is.
Some names. Oh, that's great.
Or just but kind of things. I
don't know. Arrow International is okay, a manufacturer. That's okay. One name that I know. Oh, gosh. Distributors. Of course, now if you ask me, I can't think of a name. But at our we have a public website, Revenue Online. It just lists as distributors. There's about 6 of them. Alaska Wholesale, I think, is one of them. Whalers, American. Maybe think of some quicker than I can. But I often do have distributing in the name. And there's only a handful of distributors and a handful of manufacturers.
Okay.
Operators I didn't define, or vendors, if you want me to.
All the terminology you can. Who's an operator? Who's a vendor?
Oh, okay. An operator is a for-profit business that games on behalf of permittees. So they have to contract with permittees to.
And I'm sorry, who's an operator?
It's a person. Okay. It has to be a sole proprietor. So prior, like David Lambert is a operator. And again, you know, we have the list of operators at our website at Revenue Online. But so an operator is a sole proprietor. And I say for-profit business partly because that's how they do differ from the nonprofits that have permits, right? But the gaming that they do, they can only do for the permittees. The net proceeds from their gaming has to go to the permittees.
You left me more confused.
Oh, yeah,
than
yeah,
before.
I'll get to the vendor.
Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. Vendor is, I'll get to vendor in 1 second. Operators usually are, they have a facility, a location, usually, and maybe more than one, that's all that happens at the location is gaming, pull tabs, bingo, raffles.
Is an operator like a bar or
no.
a bingo hall?
No. That's
sorry.
A vendor.
Okay.
So that was my next definition to get to. A vendor is a bar or liquor store that sells only pull tabs. And again, for permittees. They have to register with the permittee all through the department. You know, we have all of that in our system, which permittees have registered with which vendors and what operators they've contracted with. Yeah, it's a lot of connections, and operators do get to keep an expense. That's how they make money, but the rest of it has to go to the permittees, the nonprofits.
Representative Fields.
I'm trying to understand the math here, and I want to hear the department's take on this. So it looks to me like we're increasing by orders of magnitude the amount of total prize money that can go out each year, but the anticipated increase to charities that Arrow projects, which of course is just one company's projection, is only 40%. So what's the discrepancy between the department thinks we'd potentially be putting out orders of magnitude more money in prizes? There's a smaller, certainly significant projected increase in money to charities. Again, that's projected by Arrow. Does the department have a projection in total impact on charities? And what explains this discrepancy between projected income or prize distributions versus money going to charities? Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
We do not.
So this is for the record, this is Commissioner Crum through the chair to Representative Fields. So we'll give a breakdown on that. For the bill analysis, we just put in what was the actual revenue impacts to this. And so we looked at the volume done in other states that did paper tabs versus when they introduced electronic poll tabs, the percent increases to the revenue there. From that, we created a little algorithm to tie to what that would project like in Alaska. And that's why we had came up with the low, medium, and the high average as far as the income to the state. The same thing, it does apply towards the charitable gaming side. And so we'll actually give a breakdown to that in a committee response. That was an aside that happened during Eddie's. I apologize for failing to put that on the record. So we'll actually share that as where our overall projections within those bands would come from, if that helps.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Fields. All right, seeing none other, I think, committee response would be most beneficial. I think this was, for many of us, it sounded like to me a good introduction, but maybe, especially with some of the terminology, operator and vendor, and sometimes sound like the same word with a whole bunch of different meanings. So potentially just having those listed out in a really clear to understand thing for those who have not been involved in it to the level that you guys have. So that way we can understand where that's at and understand where each dollar goes. And I think certainly charitable contributions are important to Alaska. I think we do that at a high level. So understanding how this would affect that would be really important going forward. So anything else before you close,
Commissioner? Mr. Chair, thank you so much. I just want to appreciate committee members on this. As Representative Fields said, this is one of those items you have to relearn every couple of years as it comes forward. With most of these that do exist, the charitable gaming unit is a small and closed unit that does regulate large dollar amounts for the state. So we do look forward to more conversations on this, as well as getting some more public illustrations out as to what the benefits are. We'll work with some groups to see if we can actually disclose their names, so you can actually have, beyond just say nonprofit, can we say, like, here's a direct one, and pull some from our website to share that for committee members and future responses as well. This is a very good exercise to go through and look at this, because that, you know, operator and vendor would be fungible in those terms, but it's very specific in our regulation, the difference between them. Which is why that I think this is, it'll help us to really list that out and share that with you. And so we look forward to putting together that response.
Thank you, sir. All right. Seeing no other questions or comments, anything else for the good of the order? No? All right. We will set this bill aside for a future hearing with a lot more great information, I'm sure. And seeing no other comments or questions, we will conclude our business for today. And let the record reflect the time is 4:47 p.m. We are adjourned.